Welcome to another episode of the No Ceilings Podcast. I am Tyler Metcalf, joined as always by Tyler Rucker. Rucker, how are we doing?
Metcalf, another day that I get to talk basketball and NBA draft prospects with you. What is there to complain about? It's another glorious day. How are we doing? This one's going to be a very big one, Metcalf. I know we've got two prospects we're going to talk about today that I feel like are going to be very popular names throughout the whole year, and I'm really proud of everyone who's listening to us in the preseason, you know, in the off season. We got some degenerates and we're very proud of our audience. So how are you doing, Metcalf? How's the week going so far?
Well, was woken up at like 3 a.m. by my dog dry heaving and vomiting in her crate. So that was a great way to start it off. And then she proceeded to go outside and find a pile of poop to roll around in. So got to give her two baths today.
Nice.
After being woken up before the sun. So that was fun.
Yeah.
Also went and just got the marriage certificate and the marriage license. So just another day closer. We're almost there. Very
that was a stuff. Heck of a transfer, by the way. I mean,
two very different levels of emotion, just to be clear. Like,
I was going to say, choose your next word. I was going to say, please choose your words wisely. We might have some ears listening that were Mrs. Metcalf, the future Mrs. Metcalf. Please don't hate your fiance.
No, right. the marriage license and certificate, you know, turned the day around. And so, you know.
Well, I mean, you know, the vomiting and you know, rolling around in your own feces is always a good way to start the morning.
Just the best. It's like, have I had coffee yet? No. Breakfast? Why bother? Just dogs out there rolling around in poop. The best.
I mean, does that make the coffee better or does it even matter at that point?
It doesn't matter.
No, it's I don't think like, it does.
That's how today's going to go. Got it.
Oh, gosh. I had a quick side note with the pup, Murphy. I didn't tell you this yet. He, one night, because we're crate training him, and one night he got very curious with the chewing of the wires and got his mouth stuck and just let out like a horror pitch. And I had to jump off and like, basically he was trying to like get out by opening wider. And I was like, no. And then I got him out. But I joked with my fiance. I was like, yeah, that is stronger than any coffee I will ever have in my life. So I completely get what you mean about like, no, the coffee doesn't matter at that point.
Well, besides catastrophes with puppies, I am really excited for this episode because we do have two of the more exciting prospects in this draft class in Scoot Henderson and Cam Whitmore. Scoot obviously has been a big name for a while now, and Cam has steadily risen up boards and garnered more attention, especially after his pretty dominant FIBA U18 America tournament showing back in June. So we'll get to Cam, but I want to start out with Scoot Henderson, who is, you know, the kind of the bell of the ball, or at least one of them in this draft class. So obviously we saw a good amount of Scoot last year when we were watching the G League Ignite. He's 6'2", 195 point guard. Or 195-pound point guard. He played with the G League Ignite last year as a 17-year-old. He skipped his senior year of high school and went straight to the G League. And now he's going to be an 18-year-old. And kind of, I'm assuming, he's going to take that G League by storm yet again. So, obviously, we got a taste of him last year. But I don't know about you, but for me, it was more, he was just kind of in the periphery while I was watching Hardy and Beauchamp and Daniels and Foster. So now that we actually really focused in on what he did during those games, what were your kind of big picture takeaways?
Yeah, I mean, this episode's going to be great. Not trying to hammer the puppy talk too much, but you know, these are a couple of dogs. Okay, that's it. That's all I got. Yeah, I mean, I gotta get the dad jokes out early so we can actually get serious moving forward. But the thing is, being serious, you know, we've talked about Victor. Everyone's gonna hear about Victor Wembanyama as, you know, the hyped prospect, you know, the generational, prospect. And Scoot Henderson's hearing that. Scoot's gonna be hearing that the whole year, and he's been hearing it since last year. And there's a lot of people that like Scoot a lot. And I'm right there with you, Metcalf. When I was watching last year, it's like, yeah, it's, you know, of course I'm noticing this 17-year-old that has this. Yeah, it's very hard not to. That's very athletic. I'm very excited to talk to you about him. But I was watching those guys for last year's class, and it's funny going back now and rewatching and kind of getting a feel for it. But, you know, focusing on Scoot, I was very pleased, very, very pleased. I thought I was going to be, I feel like I was more impressed than I was expecting or hoping. So you've been, I mean, you even texted me, I think you just texted me and was like, Scoot's fucking good. So I'm really excited for this episode. So hit me with it. Let's let you vent out the seriousness first.
Yes, I'm. Obviously, it's obscenely early in this whole process, but he's pretty easily number one for me right now.
Okay.
I understand what Victor could be. I love Victor and the, you know, what he is currently and the potential of what he could grow into. Scoot was 17 years old, and he looked dominant against pros. He should have been in high school, and he was dominating a lot of those G League games. And even when he was playing poorly, he still looked like he belonged. He still looked like he was supposed to be there. It never looked out of sorts with him. And something we talked about last year a lot was that there's a really big learning curve for a lot of these guys going from high school ball to playing against grown men and pros and guys who are trying to make an actual NBA roster and, you know, put food on the table for their families. And there's this learning curve. And it didn't really seem like that with Scoot. Like, he just jumped in the deep end and started swimming. Obviously there were struggles. He wasn't perfect because, yes, he's a 17-year-old prospect, but his understanding of the game, his athleticism, his strength, his first step, all of it was, it already looked NBA ready. His understanding of where every single player on the floor on both teams, where they were, it was second nature to him. It was like he's been studying the game for years and not just out there playing. Obviously, he has these raw physical attributes that very few people in the world have, but the mental aspects of the game, the understanding of the game, of where the ball needs to be, where he needs to be, where, you know, that defensive rotation needs to be, where the extra pass is, where the weak side defender is rotating to when he drives baseline, and who, what does that mean for who's going to be open on the perimeter? All of it was there. And he's 17 years old playing in a professional league, and the understanding, the ability, the upside, all of it is there. So I think it's, for me, he's already this incredibly impactful and at times dominant professional. And he's just 18, and there's still so much more for him to grow into, where he's already this high level contributing player. And he's just scratching the surface of what he still could be.
Yeah, I think you're painting the perfect picture right there. I mean, I went into the film dive expecting, you know, Scoot's going to get a lot of Westbrook comparisons, which they're going to be, people are going to like jump and be like, oh, that's lazy. And it's like, no, it's not, because that's the type of players they are. Like, that is Scoot's specialty too. It's the transition blur with athleticism, and he, you know, an in and out dribble and another gear, and he's throwing down a tomahawk slam. Like, that's just kind of who Scoot is, and that's what gets you really excited about him. But it is unbelievable watching, and I feel like every time, you know, every five plays I'm like, remember how young he is, remember how young, you know, I just keep telling myself, like, you have to remember what he's doing. He's doing this to G League guys at this age. And, you know, I don't want to hammer the Scoot versus Victor debate too much, but, like, we're going to be probably talking about them a lot throughout the entire year. And Victor was going up in the Euro League against really, really tough competition around the same kind of age bracket that, you know, Scoot is. Scoot's going up against the G League. I'm not saying the G League's better than the Euro League. Let's calm down. But what Scoot was able to do in the G League at that age is just as, you know, impressive. Like, it is unbelievable how good he looks sometimes. And I think this is what I want. I took my biggest takeaway from him was not how like good he looked when he was, you know, everything was clicking and stuff. Mm-hmm. But when he made mistakes, and I think a lot of people will be like, oh, when he looked bad, he looked like he's 17. You know, I was like, yeah, obviously he's 17. But his mistakes like impressed me because it was like, that's a beautiful read. He was just, the timing's off. Mm-hmm. Or, you know what I'm saying? Like, you're talking about the rotation stuff. He made a couple drives, and there was one, he had a really strong drive to the basket against Stockton, the Stockton Kings, and he went up and threw a wraparound pass. But guy on Stockton was literally playing it perfect. He was right in the middle. And I was like, I think a lot of young point guards would have thrown that ball in the corner, and he just waited and threw like an on-the-dime wrap pass right on the wing. And I was like, that is such an impressive play from a 17-year-old in the G League. Like, I just, a lot of stuff really impressed me. Like, even when he was making mistakes, I was like, that's the right read. That's a really good read. You know, and I think there's a lot of really good tools. I think he plays the game mature. Yeah. And that's what really, really impresses me. And that's why I'm so excited for this episode with you, because I think there's a lot of good talking points about Scoot, especially with how the NBA is. And it seems like every year there's an elite point guard prospect, and people are like, is it worth it to go after an elite point guard at these days? Or is it just kind of, you know, you have this idea of like, we can always find one. And it's like, mm-hmm. Well, if you could find the elite one, jump all over it. And Scoot really does look like it.
Yeah, that's where the whole, you know, positional value kind of comes into play. And it's like, yeah, you can get by with, you know, a league average point guard, but you have to have, you know, an elite point forward, or, you know, this versatile center. You have to have Jokic, you have to have LeBron, you have to have Luka, you have to have a superstar somewhere else who's dominating the ball handling and playmaking and scoring. And if you can already get that guy at point guard, cool. Makes the roster a little easier to fill out, at least in my opinion. When you talked about the kind of maturity of his game, I think that obviously shows up in the playmaking, which we'll touch on in a second. But I also thought his interior scoring was super versatile. Obviously, his first step, I think, is Anthony Edwards, Jalen Green-esque. Like, his ability to go from 0 to 100 in a split second is astounding. And then he has a strength to finish through contact. He has the footwork to euro around guys and, you know, contort his body midair, finish with touch, finish with an inside scoop layup, finish with a big dunk over someone. That versatility already, in the understanding of how he needs to finish based on whether his defender's on his hip or the rotating guy is coming over and how he can counter their momentum. I thought all of that was really impressive, especially for someone his age, let alone just anyone.
Yeah, it's really funny because I feel like you see a lot of time with these athletic point guards, they want to finish with power all the time. And watching him, I came away impressed at that exact point of like the versatility, the creativity he had around the basket. I was like, well, okay, like, you're doing all this already. Like, and that's what I'm talking about. Like, the mistakes he made impressed me is, he'd be driving and try to get like an across the lane reverse with his right hand, you know, where it's, you should come across and go with the left, but he tried to get like a reverse to the right. And I was like, that was a beautiful play. And it's just, he had to take like a half a step more to get the right angle. And it'd be like, he missed the layup just like in and out. But I was like, oh, that's a correction of timing. And right. That's just from repetition and being young and you're playing quick. So it was like a lot of that stuff. I was like, he's going to get that down. He's got the, you know, he's got the creativity and the, all the footwork and stuff like that down. He's just got to get the timing. And that is a point guard making that jump into the G League at that age, how far advanced he was at times. I was like, oh my gosh, in another year, this could be remarkable, the stride he takes. And that's also why, like, watching him, I was like, if Scoot has a great year this year, which I'm expecting, and goes to the NBA and thrives right away, like, this might be another, this might open a doorway for young elite high school prospects to be like, why wouldn't I just go my junior year and train in the G League for 2 years? And the NBA is probably licking their chops like, yeah, we'd love you to come do that instead of, you know, playing. And it's a, probably a backbreaker to high school basketball. But, you know, if a guy's ready for it, why wouldn't they? So it's just really interesting. I'm getting off topic. That's probably an article for a day. But no, Metcalf, I was just blown away. Watching Scoot all over the place. I really, really did like his film. And I was joking forever of like, okay, Victor's number one for me. And then I watched that and I was like, okay, you make me uncomfortable a little bit, but that's going to be a fun debate all year.
So the power, the athleticism that goes into his at rim finishing is super impressive, but the cerebral aspects of his playmaking are what just really floored me, because he understands every inch of the floor and where everyone is. That was the exact pass that you were talking about.
Yeah. Where he's for falling everyone out listening. Of bounds. Yeah. Sorry.
Looks off the inside guy, one hand swing pass right on the money, like his accuracy, the vision, the creativity, the touch on his passes. It's shocking.
Mm-hmm. And it's easy when you're that young to be a young point guard that you're the big deal coming up. Mm-hmm. No offense to Jaden Hardy when he was on that team, but everyone was you were paying attention to Scoot. Even when we were talking about we were evaluating those guys for last year's class, like, you were paying attention to Scoot Henderson's box scores. You were paying attention when he had a big play, and just watching the playmaking, the feel, the anticipation, like, he just, that's what I'm talking about, like, played so mature for his age. Like, you could see there was joy in him creating a look for his teammate. Like, he just had that alley-oop to Michael Foster we showed on tape. If you're listening in your car, just pull over, pull up YouTube, you know, subscribe while you're at it. Be safe. I'm kidding. And he's jumping up and down, just like pump off the pass. And I think that's, you know, that's showing that he's going to be a gamer. He's going to be working his butt off to try to send a message this year. And he's been hearing everyone talk about Victor Wembanyama. And if you're a competitive guy, I don't care what anyone says, you're listening and you're like, I'm going to show everyone who's they're going to be the number one pick. And, you know, Scoot's going to have an opportunity. Like, this G League Ignite team is going to be pretty fun this year. Scoot's going to have an opportunity to really roll out, you know, a heck of a season, which is going to be very exciting to watch, you know, every Ignite game possible.
Yeah, and I thought what was so impressive about his passing was that he was passing guys open, where he knew every advantage. Like, when he beat his guy off the bounce in that first step, he knew that he had a 5-on-4 advantage, and how he would proceed to attack, he knew exactly what effect that would have on the, you know, help defenders and their rotation. So it's not just, oh, he's just tossing handoffs to deadly three-point shooters. It's not just little pocket passes or lobs out of the pick and roll. It's really advanced reads and difficult playmaking and legitimate defensive manipulation. And, you know, it feels like once every couple of years we talk about, you know, a point guard or point forward or point wing or whatever coming out of college who can kind of do that at a high level. And Scoot was doing that at 17. And that it's just, I can't emphasize enough how impressive that is.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just going over stats for the whole year for everyone that, you know, this is compliments of Instat. But the whole season, he went on to average 14.6 points, 4.7 rebounds, 3.9 assists, 2.2 turnovers, shooting splits, 45, 19 and 78. We'll get to that 19, I'm sure, in a little bit. But last five games of the year, 16.8 points, 5.8 rebounds, 5.4 assists, 0.8 turnovers, shooting splits, 44, 35, 87. And I really do think you just saw a young guy continue to get the other areas of his game figured out as the season went on. And this is a guy, I think, like in the first, you know, couple games of the year, I think he put up a couple like 30-point games, or his first game he had 8 points, second game he had 31 on 10 of 15. So it didn't take long for Scoot to all of a sudden be like, hey, okay, it took me one game to get the feel down. Now all of a sudden I have 31, and the playmaking really is impressive, Metcalf, because it's like you said, like he threw guys open, and you just don't see that type of maturity at that young age with that type of jump from high school to the G League. I mean, the whole last year we're in, you know, they're two different kind of players, but like Jaden Hardy, we talked all year last year about how he struggled to get the speed down and adjust, and how great he was at the end of the year because it was finally slowing down and we saw these strides. And it's like, now we're gonna see Scoot have that whole year, whole off season to kind of regroup, and now he's gonna be able to show us really what he's been working on. And man, I'm just excited. I love all of this. I love talking hoops with you. This is just feels right again.
Well, it unfortunately, it's not all sunshine and rainbows with this offense. There is the shooting. So tell me, what did you see from his shooting? What did you like? What did you not like? What were you excited about? Did anything encourage you?
I really liked his patience to get to his shot, and he understood where his area is. A lot of guys are going to be like, well, he can only shoot the mid range. And I don't think it was just that. I think it was, I know where my strength is, and I know where my weakness is, and I know what part of my game needs work. And the area of his game that needs work is his 3-point shot. But I like how he showed that he could create a little wiggle to get to his spots. And, you know, that's why plenty of people are gonna be like, oh, he's Westbrook, he can only shoot from the elbows. And it's like, okay, give me a break. Like, let's calm down. 17 year olds old, that 3-point line suddenly gets much, much deeper. So, you know, obviously we're going to be paying attention this year to see if he could take strides there, but it looks solid to me. I'm not a shot doctor. I have to throw the disclaimer out as is tradition. What did you think, Metcalf? I mean, is the 3-point shot bothering you, or are you just kind of penciling it as like a youth thing where like, okay, let's see if his body matures a little bit and things are a little bit better this year. Do you get worried if all of a sudden he's not, you know, finishing the year 38% from three?
I thought the mid-range jumper looked really nice. I thought it looked comfortable. It looked effortless. I really liked how that looked. And then I didn't think his form necessarily looked really different from three, which I thought was encouraging, even though the results weren't there, the mechanics still looked pretty sound. So that leads me to at least hoping that it's just adjusting to the distance thing. Cause you know, you, like you said, you jump from that high school line to pro. It's a big jump. We see guys go through that learning curve from high school to college and college to pro, and he just kind of skipped the middleman there. So do I think he's going to shoot 38% this year? No, absolutely not. Do I think he needs to? No. But if he's well below 30% again, that's when I'm going to start getting a little worried. He kind of has this like little leg flare thing as he elevates, which I don't love. But again, hashtag not a shot doctor. So there wasn't anything like extremely glaring about his shooting mechanics though, at least in my eyes, where it's like, okay, this guy's going to be a complete negative as a shooter for his entire career. And I don't think he obviously doesn't need to be Steph Curry. He doesn't need to be Reggie Miller from three. He just needs to be league average. And then that will open up so many driving lanes and that creation and scoring from the mid-range and at the rim. If he doesn't, then that's where I think the Russell Westbrook comparisons kind of start becoming a little more legitimate, and I get that a little more. I still think Scoot does some things that Westbrook doesn't, but if NBA defenders and NBA athletes can just go under screens and just sit at the free throw line on him, that's going to negate a lot of what he's truly exceptional at.
Yeah. I'm not too worried about the outside shot. I'll be watching it closely in the beginning of the year, but I still think like he understands the strengths of his game. He's just got to get to the point where he can make the defense respect him. I don't think Scoot's ever going to be a guy that's like, okay, every time he's open from three, he's pulling it.
Right.
You know, the funniest thing about this Metcalf is I read earlier his stats for the year, courtesy of Instat, and everyone probably heard 19% from three, and they were like rolling their eyes. Do you know what he shot his first seven games in the G League from three?
Educate me.
6.3%.
Not good.
So, yeah. I mean, like, you could tell, okay, yeah, maybe a little bit of a jump in trying to figure out the distance, but at that same time, he was averaging 17 a game on 47% shooting from the field, but 6% from three. He made a 1-3 his second game and then had like six straight games or five straight games without a make. So I'm gonna be fine with Scoot. Scoot's gonna figure it out. I'm gonna say that's a youth thing, because it didn't look like the form is that, like, let's warn the public, you know, right, or warn the governor about like his outside shot. I think he's gonna be fine. It's just gonna be one of those. It's gonna be a fantastic thing to monitor, because you know he's been working all off season. You know he knows what's ahead of him, what lies ahead of him. So I understand everyone that's, you know, ringing that Scoot Henderson number one on my future big board siren, because Metcalf. A lot of people on Draft Twitter are very proud to say it right now, and congratulations. It's about to be September, and you might be correct. You might be able to tell us the future. So, let me know who wins MVP the next 5 years. Do that. But I really, really like Scoot. What'd you think about the defense? Unless you got something else you want to talk about, because
on the offense. He didn't do it a ton, but it was a couple times a game where he would make some really nice cuts, and I think that's really important. And, you know, when we talk about Westbrook, that's something Westbrook has never been willing or able to do. And when you're a non-shooter, you have to at least cut every now and then. There were a lot of times where he would be really stagnant and just kind of stationary off ball, because I'm assuming that was literally the first time in his life where he didn't have the ball 90% of the time while he was on the court. So there's a big learning curve there, but every now and then there would be a really nice back cut that he would make. So I do think that there is a little bit more feasibility with him playing off ball. Obviously you still want him as your point guard, but in the flow of the offense, I think he will be able to kind of give it up and then do more than just stand there, which, you know, I think is really important.
Definitely. I mean, if you're not shooting it well from outside, how else are you impacting the game? And I think that shows some maturity when you're a young guard of, you know, reading the floor, analyzing how to get open and how to find weaknesses and lapses in the defense. And those are important stuff. I mean, especially you got the athleticism and that quickness. And I didn't get the chance to kind of rant on it earlier, but like his speed, not just getting from 0 to 100, I think you said this, but not just getting from 0 to 100. He has multiple turbo buttons that I think he understands when to use. That is very, very rare. Like, that really was impressive to me, because I was like, man, he already knows like when to hit the afterburners and when to use like full power and 80% power. Like, not just change of gears, like just knowing your speed and knowing when it is the optimized time to use different levels of your speed, because that makes you just a absolute nightmare for defenders to try to figure you out. And I was just blown away. I was very, very impressed. And one of those guys, I think both of these guys that we're going to talk about, like, you just kept wanting to watch more film. And like, I got prepared for this with the Scoop film to talk with you, and I was like, I'm probably going to watch it after we record this. Like, just very, very excited to see what he can do in another year.
All right. So the defense, if that's where it felt more like he was a 17-year-old to me.
Okay. Yeah. You hit me with this, because you always ask me the questions that, and I I get to points where I swear I'm watching film now, and I'm like, I'm really excited to hear what Metcalf thinks about this. And the defense is something that my quick review was, I watched and I was like, he's 17. Like you just said, I was like, he's 17, but he's battling, and I know he's going to have some weaknesses, but I'm okay with the negative. So you break it down for me. What do you think?
Yeah. And so there were definitely some lapses because, you know, he's playing in more sophisticated offenses and defenses and schemes and all that stuff. But I thought his footwork was really impressive. He obviously has the strength to not knock guys off their spots. I thought his screen navigation was really impressive. He just kind of slides off of screens and gets back into position and between the ball and the rim pretty easily. I thought his work rate was really high, and then he made some rotations that were really impressive. It wasn't as consistent as you obviously want it to be, but effort.
I love that fucking play. Sorry, go ahead. No, everyone that's listening, it was just him diving and caring. So go ahead, Metcalf.
And then that's so much of it, where he's reading the play, he's making that rotation, he's, you know, fighting through a screen, he's working to get back rim side, and he's being disruptive with his footwork, with his hands, with his chest. I thought it was really impressive.
I hate but love using this. He gave a shit.
Yeah.
He cared. And that's what I immediately, when I was watching, like,
and it'd be so easy for him not to.
It'd be so easy. So easy. And immediately when I was watching, like, his first couple of games, I was like, he's making mistakes, but he cares every possession. Like, mm-hmm. he's dialed in. He's given, like, a couple times he made some bad plays, but it was like, he was too physical. He was over anxious about trying to, like, front a guy, or someone was trying to post him up, and he's like, you're not going to post me. And it was like a grab foul. And I was like, those are a 17-year-old trying to prove his worth, trying to be a little anxious and get a steal. And I was like, that's fine. Those are fixable. Those are also just effort fouls, where it's just like, okay, just tone down a little bit. But it's competitiveness that you care. You're like, I liked his feet were active. We saw a couple times on those clips, like, you saw his feet are active. He's moving. He's keeping his hands out. He's sliding. He's trying to be disruptive. And I think coaches love that, because you can work with that. You can improve that, because it's a guy that's going to watch the film and be like, all right, I understand. And making those rotations, we're not saying, you know, I'm not saying he's perfect on defense. There's plenty of times he's going to have to figure stuff. Like, he had a couple steals where he picks guys' pockets, and I was like, okay, you got lucky. You got lucky there. Yeah. Like, you got really lucky there, because if not, that was a blow-by layup. But it just shows you, like, he has the explosiveness, and he's willing to also get after it defensively. A lot of times you see guys like this with that offensive skill set, they might, you know, you don't have the two-way potential package. He looks like he could be a really damn good basketball player, and that's what we're talking about. Like, a lot of people will think you could find these point guards everywhere, and it's like, you might not find this one everywhere. Like, your franchise might not have this opportunity to get this guy. So, no, I really, really like Scoot. I think he's got a shot to really quickly be, you know, I don't think it's a slam dunk that's like, oh, it's got to be Victor. I think Scoot's got a really serious argument to go first, regardless of team need.
Yeah, and for me, the defense, you know, the defensive impact already, but then the defensive upside that he has, that's what separates the two a lot for me. And I know big man or center defense is generally more important, and Victor's shot blocking is super impressive, but like we talked about in his episode, he kind of gets exposed a lot in space, and his fundamentals out there are really sloppy. I didn't see any of that with Scoot. The struggles that I saw with Scoot were someone learning these new schemes and adapting to the speed and physicality, and how precise and exact he has to be with his rotations and decisions. With more reps, I think that improves.
I completely agree. You know, we're saying this stuff, you know, it's about to be September, guys. Like, me and Metcalf are going to change our mind 15 times. Oh, God, but yes. And this debate's going to be all year. But I'm saying, what I'm watching last year's film. This is the beautiful part about this with these guys is we get to talk about last year's film to get prepared for this year. And another crazy thing to realize is last year is last year. This year, everything could change. Like Victor could come out and just be beasting and look way more comfortable and way more energetic. And I'll be like, okay, all right, there you go. There, that's why he's going to be number one. But I like Scoot's. I like Scoot has less questions right now for me than Victor did. And when I watch Victor's film, I had a lot of questions that I'm a little, you know, I'm not sleeping as good as I should when I'm trying to pencil him in as number one. And Scoot watching his, I was like, man, this is just, oh, this is fun. Like, it's just like, this is really fun because he's a dog. He's going to be competing. And that's, I'm also a humongous, I have been my whole, you know, his whole career as, or my whole career watching basketball is I love Westbrook. I loved watching Westbrook. I was always saying, screw it. I'll go to war with for Westbrook all the time because I love guys that just will say, I don't care who's across me. I'm going to compete. And Scoot gives me that same vibe. So I'm going to be in some trouble this year. I got a real, you know, dilemma on my hands, Metcalf, but you're already putting Scoot at one, huh? All right.
Yeah, I think he's more polished and ready to go from day one. And I, like you said, I have fewer questions about him, and I still think he's just scratching the surface of what he could be overall. I think once he really slows the game down mentally and fully adapts to the speed of play, and I'm not even talking about any shooting improvements yet, just that alone, I think that takes him into a spot where, like, the G League, it wouldn't surprise me if the G League Ignite or in the G League competition was just really boring for him next year because he's just way too good for it already.
Yeah. I mean, I'm one of those guys that will always go to war for the G League because I think a lot of people still talk down about it.
Yeah. I didn't mean it as an insult.
No, guys. I wasn't saying you. I'm just saying a lot of people will do it.
Yeah.
And my point being, what he did last year at that age against the G League in the G League is way more remarkable than what a lot of people will realize. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what I just kept watching. I was like, oh my gosh, this is really damn impressive. So I'm agreeing with you. I could see him coming out this year and kicking the shit out of everyone in the G League. And it could be boring. And I don't know, maybe he gets some load management. Who knows if he's, you know, just completely going on a tear. But really fun, Metcalf. I was excited to do this film dive and talk to you about it because I hadn't done the deep dive yet, the preseason deep dive. And, man, was I happy that we did that, you know, after watching the film. Got anything else?
I do not. Do you?
No, I mean... I'm going to try to save it because I feel like we're going to talk about him all year. I'm going to be like, hey, Metcalf, I haven't talked about him in like a week and a half. Can we get another Scoot? So, but I mean, really, really liked him. I'm excited to see what he can do. You know, if I had Victor 1A, I think Scoot might be 1B right now.
Well, and someone else who is rapidly rising up boards and is a tremendous amount of fun to watch is Cam Whitmore. 6'7", 232-pound forward going to Villanova. What makes you so excited about Whitmore?
I love Whitmore. I am just drooling over Whitmore. I mean, for everyone that listened to one of our previous episodes, you know, I was foaming at the mouth about Jairus Walker, but oh my gosh, do I love me some Cam Whitmore. I watched... like it was like the McDonald's or whatever, those games. And I was just like, who the hell is that guy? And I was like, that's Cam Whitmore. I was like, my goodness, I am in already. And then I was like, oh, he's going to Villanova. And then I was like, okay, thanks a lot, Jay Wright, for leaving. But I just watch him and, you know, we've talked in previous episodes about like finding guys that pop in the preseason, finding guys that get you excited. And that dude gets me very excited to watch some college basketball next year because it's just, this wing with size, nastiness. He's just it's a freight train of terror coming down the lane. He just does some stuff above the rim that's really impressive. And I'm like, okay, so he's going to be this athletic freak, big bodied guy that just has to dunk all the time. And then I've seen his shot improve, Metcalf. And I'm excited to talk to you about it because I think it's on the right way. I don't think it's still got some work to do, but just the power he has. And I think it's nastiness, not just with his dunks. I think he's got that just mindset of just trying to destroy people. And I have a weakness for that. And I've heard him in interviews. I've heard him talk. And I was just like, oh man, this dude just might just be a nasty kid. Like that's, and I like that he's going to Nova. He's going to, they're going to have a good, nice little squad, some good pieces, some good talent. I think Armstrong's going there too, but you know, I just very, very intrigued. The more I watch him, the more I think there's some really, really good foundational skills. And for everyone watching on YouTube, that was Metcalf laughing because he does some stuff every game, Metcalf, that I swear, like, I'm literally, like, peeing my pants laughing. I'm like, oh, my gosh. Like, get the children out of the room. They can't watch this stuff. Like, for everyone listening, it was just like a floater in the lane out of control and then – right as it's going off the backboard and rim, he just goes up, grabs the tip dunk, one-handed, slams it down. And I was like, okay, I literally he's just really fun. And I don't think it's just one of these guys like, oh, he just dunks everything. I think there's a lot of versatility that I'm intrigued to see develop. Why are you not high on him? Because you sent me a text whoa, Metcalf, what's going on? You're gonna break my heart.
No, I said that I really like him, but I'm not completely sold.
Why do you hurt me? I feel like Rose on the board of Titanic after it sank, and I just had to let you fall into the abyss.
I could have fit
ocean.
Let me on. So can I talk about the fun stuff first, or do I have to go straight into the pessimism?
We can talk about the fun stuff first. Everyone likes to, you know, give me the dessert first, as The Rock says in Fast and Furious.
It's just raw power. And yeah. Like he goes to the rim with an intent to hurt someone or break the glass or just pop the ball or just do something destructive every time. And he's one of the most explosive players in the country this year. Like that play I was giggling at, his second jump, he was off the ground before the defenders landed.
And it's like, true.
It was a bad floater that like careened way off the side of the rim. And his second jump is taking him across the lane and he's just tomahawking it on the tip dunk. It's like, what the fuck are you doing? But then even when there's a shot blocker there, he has this incredible body control to contort himself and, you know, do like a windmill reverse layup, you know, that's soft off the glass as he flies into the first row. It's like, these aren't the same person. They're like this, the same human being should not be able to do these two different things that are so drastically different. And that really gets me excited about his interior scoring because, like you said, it's not just based on athleticism when he's attacking the rim. Obviously, the athleticism is a huge factor and plays a huge part in his success. But he's going to be facing guys who are as strong and as powerful and as explosive as him. And to already kind of have those counters where he can finish with touch at different angles, it's so important for the long term for him.
Yeah, I mean, the part I'm so excited about is – when he has an open lane, this is what I was thinking about. Okay. So like, I'm not saying he's this athlete, but you know, when you had that feeling of like when Vince Carter had a runway and you were just like, oh gosh, like
I'll do something cool.
Yeah. He has that same vibe of like just dunking with just power and anger and nastiness. And like, that's when Vince was like in Toronto and just had that, like every time he had a lane, you're like, oh shit. And I had that watching him. But then the most impressive thing is, and you're hinting at it, when you see a guy like that can just dunk all the time in the high school level, and even young in college, they usually don't have the rest of like the tools kind of developing. And you see, like, he'll have that, like, that light up of like, oh, I'm attacking, and then someone closes hard, but he has the ability to counter it and kind of like be creative with his footwork and recognition. And that's what gets me really, really excited. Like you're saying, like, I just, there's a really good foundation of a lot of stuff. There's some stuff that needs some work, but there's a really, really good foundation. And I like that he's going to Nova. Like we talked about Jairus Walker going to Houston and how excited that, you know, that marriage could be, if you want to put it that way. The Nova fit for Whitmore could be so outstanding. And I'm going to just say it. I think he plays like he's an asshole. And I think that's a good, like, that's an outstanding thing. You know how we always talk, like, I wish this guy would just dunk all the time. I think Whitmore watched a lot of guys as a young kid who's like, why doesn't he just dunk everything? And now he's just like, I'm going to do it. But no, being serious, I think Nova is going to be very exciting because of him. I think you're going to have to watch as much Villanova basketball as you can this year, because I think he's got a shot to really be like a top five guy. Now, some things are going to fall in place. I can barely contain myself. Take over, Metcalf. I'm about to black out. Sorry.
Yeah, no. So I softened the blow. Now it'll be a little bit of a downer. So I'm just a little hesitant on him is that I'll start with the offense.
Okay.
It feels like he just needs to refine some of his skills a little bit more. It felt like he turned the ball over a lot, some of his dribble attacks are really impressive, where he'll go between the legs, cross over, spin back, and, you know, finish with a huge dunk. It's like, holy crap. And then the next guy or the next possession down, he'll just fumble over the ball or just get it, you know, poked away with like a really weak dig attempt by a help defender. And it's like if you're going to be this kind of scoring forward, this point forward who slashes from the perimeter all the time, that can't happen. That has to be so much tighter. So, you know, that's where Villanova comes into play, because I think everyone who goes there, their fundamentals improve. Obviously, it's a new coaching staff, so who knows? It'll be a new experience for all of us. But I still think the kind of the soul of that program is still there, and like what they value, I think, is still going to be there. So I think that's going to be a really good spot for him to improve on that and improve on some of his decision making with his passing. There are some passes that were like, oh, yes. And then others where he's making an outlet pass and it's landing out of bounds. It's like, what the fuck was that? So offensively, that's kind of my concerns. The shot, let's talk about the shot, because you said you like it. I don't know what to do with it. Sometimes it looks really good. Other times it doesn't. There's just something about his form that kind of rubs me the wrong way. I don't know what it is. I don't know if he kind of has like a narrow base. There are some jumpers where it looks like he's jumping almost exclusively off his left leg. They're like the arc on some of his shots is super high, but then like you just saw, like it falls through, you know, through the net soft as a feather. So I don't know what it is about his shot, but just something in it feels off.
Yeah. So the fascinating thing, and I guess we should have said this for, you know, going into this, but I'm trying to get all the numbers up for him. So Whitmore was really making some buzz with his high school play. And then he really, he was playing for U18s this summer. Really, like, it, you it watch was... that film, you're going to be like, this, why is this dude not the number one pick? But, you know, competition. They were beating everyone by 40 points. So the thing with watching those games and then watching his EYBL and, like, you know, high school, if you want to put it that way, the shot looks already like way different to me. You can tell me if I'm wrong. It just looks quicker. Like, he's been working on that. When I went, it was funny because I kind of did like reverse order. Like, I went back and I was watching, like, I've been watching the U18s, and then I went back and watched high school and EYBL stuff. And I was like, whoa, the shot is way slower back then. And like you're saying, it looked kind of like a slow loading, a little bit robotic. And then I watched him with U18, and it looks like he's definitely been putting in work, which not surprising. If you're watching him on the court, he looks like he's just right. a guy that probably takes the game serious. So I'm like you. I had a lot of more questions watching the high school. I was like, okay, so this is where we were coming from. But I'm just going off of my opinion. I believe that it's something that's been worked on, that's probably still being developed and groomed and repetition, because it did look a little bit faster with his play in the U18. I'm looking at stats, like in six games for the USA, he averaged 18.3 points, 6.3 rebounds, 1.5 assists, one steal a game. Shooting numbers, these are pretty good, Metcalf. 62, 45, 71.
Not bad.
And then his EYBL stuff was 17.8 points, 8 rebounds, 2 assists, 2.3 steals. Shooting splits were 49-22 and 48, which will obviously raise some concerns. But it just definitely looks like, to me, if he's going to be the type of player, the type of prospect that I think he can be, which I think he could be a top three pick, that shot's going to have to be rolling this year. Like he's got to show that, like, okay, this looks like a guy that could become a wing who can space the floor and shoot around 40% in his NBA career. But, you know, I might be optimistic. It just looks like it's got the potential to get there, but I like him going to Nova, like you said.
Yeah, I'm not out on the shot. I'm confused by it, and I just kind of need to see it. It's just one of those things where it's like, just show me it. And if it's 35% next year, that cool,
right?
And are you confident going into it? Awesome, because that was one of my, you know, kind of concerns during the U18 film, was that he was kind of hesitant to shoot. And then when he was hesitant and would, you know, guys sagging off him like 6 feet and he's looking to make the extra pass and there isn't one, and then he reluctantly shoots, it's like clangs off the side of the rim. It's like, okay, well, yeah, that's what happens. But then when you just step into it and take it, you drain it. So it's like, okay, have a little bit of confidence in it, because the release is quicker. It's, you know, less mechanical. There's less load up. It's a little smoother. So just be confident in the work that you've been putting in and trust the results. And when he did that, the results are good. So I just kind of need to see it at the next level. I think Villanova, like I said about the fundamentals, I think that's going to be a really good spot for him to test it and to use it and to show whether or not it's a legitimate weapon for him or not. The other side of the ball with his defense, I think Villanova is going to be really important again, because I generally liked his defense, but it was similar to the offense where it felt like the fundamentals were lacking, where he relied so much on his athleticism, and he could, because he's the best athlete on the floor when he's out there. So that alone cleans up any footwork errors, any, you know, being a step late on a rotation. You know, there's a lot of stuff where he was just kind of ball watching and like two or three steps farther away from his man where he should have been. And he still had the burst and the length and the athleticism to kind of rotate and then make it or right. make this deal. So I like him as a defensive playmaker. I think he has a lot of defensive versatility, but going to Nova and really understanding those rotations and the timing and how to move his feet and communicate, I think that's going to be really important for him.
Yeah. And for everyone listening, like, we're, you know, our boy Corey at No Ceilings does great stuff throughout the year about stocks and what players' stocks are going up and down and in the stock rankings. And we're talking about futures right now.
Yeah.
We're talking about guys, like, there's going to be guys me and Metcalf are talking about for the next week or two. That was an absurd block. We're gonna be talking about guys, and someone's gonna have a bad year. Someone's gonna slip down the boards, and we're gonna look back and be like, yeah, remember that episode where we said he could go fifth and he's, you know, going 34th? It happens because we're talking about high school players and saying if everything falls into place, he could be up here. If everything goes great, he could be skyrocketing up boards. Not everything's gonna happen like we're hoping and dreaming. But Whitmore has that's what I'm saying, like the foundation. He's showing these flashes and they're more than flashes probably, but like now you just need it to be more consistent.
Yeah.
The fundamentals on both sides, I agree with you. He needs some work with his footwork offensively. Because it's already impressive. It's just if he could get even better,
right.
It's going to be outstanding. And then defensively, I'm right there with you. I think he can get by on athleticism. And we've talked about that a lot, is when you're that athletic in high school, you're going to think, hey, I can always make up for it with my speed and stuff. And you're going to find out quickly, you know, even playing at Nova in practices, they're going to tell you, no, you're going to get picked apart quick. You got to be strong up here, not just with your athleticism and dunking on everyone, because even, you know, I know Jay Wright's gone, but even in a school like Nova, they don't care if you can just dunk everything. You got to play team basketball. You got to make the right reads. You got to be rotating and helping everybody out. So that's why I'm so excited to see him go there, and just really like him. He tries to destroy people with dunks. I mean, how can I not like him? And I just think there's a lot of upside.
Yes.
And it's not just as an attacking slasher. I think there is multi-level scoring upside that becomes a really damn good basketball player.
So when you mentioned multi-level scoring, what encourages you about that? Because right now I kind of only see someone who can slash and finish at the rim however the fuck he wants, and then occasionally knock down like a catch and shoot three. So do you see more pull-up threes, more mid-range stuff? Because I didn't see much of any of that from him.
I think that's holding him back from potentially, like, if he's going to be a top three pick, like I'm saying, if he could get up there, he's gonna have to demonstrate that. He's gotta have to find the in-between game, because like he will light up to try to dunk on everything he can. And then he has that creativity around the basket that we're talking about to like react to a closing line of defense and, you know, switch his body, like alter his body. And then the 3-point shot, I think, is coming along. Now you got to get everything else in between. Now it could take a while, but I still think like with some of the footwork flashes he's shown, he looks like he has a good first step, but he's got to figure out how to kind of find that mid-range game where he could get a little bit of a pull-up and stuff like that. But I'm just intrigued, because I when I'm watching high school guys, I'm looking for like, where's the foundational pieces that you can keep chipping away to kind of own in on that versatility. And I think he attacks with vicious intentions. He can finish with power, and it looks like the outside shot now is developing. If everything is still brewing, maybe this mid-range game, maybe the mid, like in-between game is now the next step to unlock. Because I just, like, what you pointed out about his handle was something that really, like, I was not expecting. Like, he had a couple dribble sequences. I was like, my goodness, you got that already with this size? Like, you can do that. And yes, he gets errant and has some turnovers, but just showcasing that you have that, it was so impressive. I was like, whoa, all right. Like, if this is loading, all of this could really come together and really make a monster. But I hear you, Metcalf. I understand every hesitation you might have about it. He might be more of a guy that looks like he's going towards the top 10, but I think there's also just a world where he could skyrocket.
So you mentioned him earlier, and we were both effusive with our praise about Jairus Walker in our previous episode. Between the two right now.
Don't do this to me. Don't do this to me.
Between the two, who do you prefer?
Or
are they so different that it's not even kind of worth comparing?
It's a different type of love. Like, I'm not just trying to say, like, I love both of them. So I feel like I saw a mock just the other day. I was just like, I'll just see where everyone's got people. So I feel like I saw a mock of having Jairus Walker like 17th, and I was like,
oh, I hate that.
Oh boy. but I think there's a world where I will have both Whitmore and Jairus in my top six of my way too early. This is crazy preseason big board. But Jairus is, I think, the playmaking point forward type that's really physical, plays with his hair on fire. And I think Whitmore is the potential offensive upside. I'm going to, you know, dunk on you and send you into a another dimension. Like he just tries to rip the rim down every time he goes. But I think there's more versatility with them. I just love both players. I think the upside for 23 for the draft with both of them, I think they could skyrocket. Yeah. Like everyone's talking about Victor. Everyone's talking about Scoot, us included. I think those are the next guys that really could get up there. Nick Smith, we're going to talk about one episode, but I think Whitmore and Jairus Walker are two guys that I think NBA teams are going to be really damn excited about when all things are said and done. What about you?
For me right now, it's Walker. I think he's just a little more skilled. I think the playmaking's a little more refined. I think the defense is a little more consistent, but I definitely understand what you're saying with the upside of Whitmore. And I know I'm questioning Whitmore right now, but I still love him. He's easily lottery, probably top 10 for me right now. So it's not like I'm out on the kid or don't think he can improve in any of these areas. I just think there are some really important areas for him to improve that will change his impact with an NBA team from rotation role player to like legit awesome, you know, top five guy on a contender.
For sure. Yeah.
And if he does make those improvements, then we're talking about a guy who has, you know, potentially all-star capabilities.
And let's say hypothetically, both of them take huge strides in all the, you know, improvement areas we've been talking about in the last couple of episodes with, especially these two guys, like, and say they have a perfect year and they're both going top five come next year's draft. I could see them going in different orders because their skill sets mm-hmm. are different. Where it's like, if the team has a good playmaking backcourt, I think they could prefer Whitmore because they might be like, we need some nastiness. We need some just power inside. We need someone who could potentially space the floor, become a good shooter. Maybe they prefer Whitmore. If some team's like, we need a guy who could just do a little bit of everything, who makes great reads, who stands out on both sides of the ball, they might love Walker. Now, everyone needs to remember, it's about to be September. We're talking very, very early this year. So let's, you know, come after me and Metcalf when it's like April and March and all that stuff when we're saying this stuff. Right now, we like to have fun.
All right. Well, it is time to update the most exclusive club
you love
in the basketball world. I do. I love it so much. The No Ceilings Green Room. So currently in Victor Wembanyama, Derek Whitehead, Jairus Walker, Scoot Henderson, in or out?
Scoot's in pretty easily. He might be partying with the DJ. Shout out to Dre Whitehead. I hated that you're going through that surgery.
That
sounds
sucks.
Like he's going to be back in the fall. Very much sucks, but I'm not changing where I have him on my big board.
Nope.
And that stuff will get released at a later time. But no, Scoot's in pretty easily for me. What about you?
Yeah, I think he's kind of in the same boat with Victor, where he has a whole section roped off with his entire entourage and family and friends, and they are kind of running the club right now.
Yeah, I think Scoot, during the 2022 green room, I think Scoot tried to get in, and the bouncer was like, come back in 2 months. Like, I know this is a fake. Just come back in 2 months when it's your birthday, and you can come in anytime you want. So now he's in there, and he's a regular.
All right. What about Whitmore?
Yeah, he's in for me. I don't know what you're talking about. Don't even try it. Don't even try it. This isn't too early to have arguments about the green room. So I think Whitmore's in.
That's offensive already.
No, well, I'm
look
just
at
really,
you. Look at you getting feisty.
I've watched him and I'm going to be shocked. I don't know. I got weird vibes about Whitmore. I got like very, very early, but I have the Keegan Murray, I'm about to fall in love with another prospect vibes about Mr. Whitmore, but it's very early. I haven't watched everyone yet. I'm just trying to get my fix. I have a problem. It's called the draft.
okay,
is he in for you?
Yeah, he's in. So, okay. so settle down.
Put
the claws away.
Don't test me.
All right, Rucker, you got anything else?
No, I just want to say I love everyone. That's all.
This is a blast.
Just want to say I love you guys. I'm excited that we're already getting the gears rolling. I'm excited for the next month when we get the announcements rolling out, and for all the degenerates that have been listening to all these episodes and the quote off season. Gosh, we love you guys. You're family.
You're just the best.
You're just the best. What else? You got anything else? Anything, any funny stuff?
I don't think so.
That we think's funny.
Yeah, that's a very important distinction.
Pretty angry about Chet.
Not thrilled.
I know Thunder fans have been depressed, but I feel like I've just been kind of sitting in a room listening to I Just Died in Your Arms Tonight. Like in the, my fiance hasn't noticed, but I feel like I just come out at like 3 a.m. and start listening to that and just like crying uncontrollably about Chet not playing this year. So stupid. Just so stupid.
But that's what he gets for being so skinny, you know. That's yeah, no, I, you know, fuck it. I'm going to go on a quick little rant.
Yes.
If you're one of these douchebags who's out there being like, eh, fucking told you so, he can't hold up. Fuck you. If you're rooting for fucking injuries and celebrating when guys get hurt, you suck. That's not what this is about. Like, and also, being skinny doesn't cause foot injuries, you dumb shits. That's not what it is. He was on a, it was a fluke injury where he misstepped going in transition on a wet floor and got hurt. It happens. For fuck's sake.
Are we going to get canceled because of your rant by skinny haters? No. Hey,
I'll serious. Just bleep out half of it.
No, that was a good rant, and everyone needed to hear that. And I don't have any time for people that were like, oh, it's because he's skinny.
If he was fat, that would make sense.
Feel like
him being light does not increase foot injury. I
feel like an employee at a major company had a tweet out about it, and I'm not usually a guy that tries to go after people for saying stuff on the internet, but I was very close. Very close there.
I think I know who you're talking about. And
you do.
It seemed like the rest of the world had you covered on that.
Yeah, one day I'm just gonna lose it. And I pity whoever gets the other side of that. It sucks. It really does suck. The problem is everyone, I myself included, I tweeted something and I was talking about like, well, those next CBA talks are going to be interesting because I think teams are going to get to a point where they're like, hey, it's the off season. We don't want to worry about you getting hurt and stuff and playing in pickup games. And I understand that, but here's the reality. If Chet wasn't playing for the Pro-Am in Seattle, he could have done this in the open gym a week later with Giddy and his teammates. Like, it just sucks. It was just poor timing. It's nobody's fault except LeBron. No, I'm kidding. but it sucks. And I'm, hey, Chet's a dog. He's going to work his ass off. OKC's going to take their time. He's still going to be a damn good basketball player with a very, yes, very long career. And I'm excited to see him come back. And, Just a bummer. But also, randomly, I want to finish on this note. This is for my Houston Rockets fans out there. Why does no one believe in Jabari Smith anymore? Have you seen this lately?
Yeah.
What's going on? I
still think he's very good at basketball.
I was like, what did I miss? Like, I was like, did he like come out and say like The Notebook's a terrible movie? Like, why does no one like Jabari Smith anymore? I don't know. But I'm a Rockets fan this year. I thought those jerseys were kind of dope. But that's all I got, Metcalf. I just wanted to give my tribute to Chet. I'm excited for betting him next year to win Rookie of the Year compared to Victor. and that's all I got, man. The year of the thin man, you know?
Yeah, there we go.
It'll be next year.
Metcalf, tell people where they can find you.
It's been a pleasure. I'm at NoCeilingsNBA.com. In case you guys don't know, you should subscribe. It's free. And the floodgates are going to open up soon. So keep an eye on the near horizon, because once they open, oh boy, we've got a lot of goodies planned. And it is going to be a train out of hell. So thank you guys all for your support. We've been working really hard behind the scenes, and I'm excited for everything. And please subscribe to YouTube, because we're going to have some film breakdowns this year. I think Metcalf and I are going to even do some stuff. So Metcalf, you take over. This has just been a real treat.
Well, once again, I'm Tyler Metcalf. You can follow me on Twitter at TeamMetcalf11. You can find all of our merchandise at NoCeilingsNBA.BigCartel.com. And you can find all of our written work at NoCeilingsNBA.com. It's 100% free. Just click that subscribe button to ensure that you never miss anything we write. It gets delivered directly to your inbox the second we publish it. You can also follow us on Twitter at NoCeilingsNBA and on YouTube at NoCeilingsTV, where you can watch this podcast and a lot of really cool breakdowns and segments and stuff that we're planning on next year. So if you enjoyed this episode, please make sure to subscribe, leave a review, and a 5-star rating. Until next time, see ya.